Let's turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 10. First Chronicles chapter 10, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard after Saul and after his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was wounded of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. So Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise on the sword and died. So Saul died, and his three sons and all his house died together. And when all the men of Israel that were in the valley saw that, they fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, then they forsook their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And when they had stripped him, they took his head and his armor, and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to carry tidings unto their idols and to the people. And they put his armor in the house of their gods and fastened his head in the temple of Dagon. And when all Jabesh-Gilead heard all that the Philistines had done to Saul, they arose, all the valiant men, and took away the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons and brought them to Jabesh, and buried their bones under the oak in Jabesh, and fasted 7 days. So Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it. And he inquired not of the Lord, therefore he slew him, and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. So chapter 10 then brings us the beginning of the monarchy and the demise of Saul. Again, the monarchy is going to be important to the chronicler because he is wanting to see the worship of God set up properly. And of course, a civil magistrate has something to say about that within his realms. Not en sacris, but circa sacra, as we say in the Latin, that is, around the holy things and not administering the holy things himself. So did Hezekiah, so did David, so did Josiah, and even to a certain extent, so did Asa, and so did Jehoshaphat. And so the chronicler understands that, although many modern Christians do not, that we need a godly king in order to have a godly church within our realms. We can have a godly church without a godly king, but if we have a civil authority that preserves and supports and promotes the true religion and is himself a man that rules in the fear of God, then the church and its mission will be enhanced within those realms. So we hear, first of all, in chapter 10, we jump right into the middle of the battle between Saul and the Philistines at the end of Saul's reign, not at the beginning, because we are hustling to get to David, if you will. And so Saul dies upon Mount Gilboa, and we see the manner of his death, but we also see the company of his death, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, his sons. Well, we might say, why did they have to die? They didn't do anything wrong. It was Saul. Well, we understand, don't we, that when wicked leaders make wicked covenants, that often their subjects end up suffering for it. And this is why the sins of great men are aggravated sins. Beyond that, we note also that the Lord was clearing the way for David. And as long as even godly Jonathan lived, David would have had a rival for his kingship. Now, for Jonathan's part, I believe that it was clear who was going to be king. I don't think Jonathan had any difficult designs on that. But I do think that it would have created confusion for the people. And so the Lord took Jonathan away too. And remember that when Jonathan was taken away, as we heard earlier today, he was taken to nothing but paradise with his Lord. Jonathan did not die the death of the covenant breaker. All right, so then we see that Saul ended his life as he had lived his life, and that is full of harming himself. Saul injured himself at every turn by not following the word of the Lord. And this is what we want to remember, that there is a consistency in the way that Saul died with the way that Saul lived. He lived in such a way so as not to hearken to the voice of the Lord, not to inquire of him, but to inquire of a familiar spirit, to turn away from obeying the Lord, from claiming that he was obeying when he wasn't obeying, and so on. All of these things, beloved, they only poke holes in our soul. They only do us harm. And so Saul dies in reiteration of all of those points that he had undertaken during his days, and that is that he died as he lived, at his own hand. He was his own worst enemy. His armor bearer is a more nuanced or interesting study, I think. He would not slay his king. He was sore afraid to do so, apparently fearing the commandment of God, and yet not fearing it quite enough, because then he unlawfully took his own life with Saul. And so we want to beware of following an evil example, even when that example is of authority. Remember that the Lord and his commandments are our guide, not someone who might be in authority over us. Although they can be a good example, often they are not, and when they are not, they must not be followed. So this is what we see here down through verse 5. Saul died, and his three sons, and this is key, and all his house died together. His house could not continue because the Lord was seeking a man after his own heart to serve as king. That would be David. All right, so then we have, when the leader is struck down, we see what happens. And in verse 7, all of the men of Israel flee. They even fled their own homes, and the Philistines came then and occupied that territory. So what do wicked leaders do in the state? They clear out land for others to take it up instead of those who rightly belong there. I think we've seen a bit of that in our day. But then also, what do ecclesiastical leaders do? They also clear out godly tracts of doctrine, if you will, and let foul doctrine come in its room. This is what Saul did during his life. It's what wicked churchmen have been doing since before that time. We are to defend, right? Not to give up. We are to give our lives, if necessary, for the field that God has planted for us. And that field, ecclesiastically speaking, is our historic confession of Christianity as ensconced in our confessions. And we ought not to move away from them in such a way that we open the field to usurpers to come in and take the ground of doctrine that we have settled and have had settled for these past few hundred years. Sadly, we're not doing a very good job of that church-wide in the visible church. Let us redouble our efforts in prayer not to let the usurpers in and take the good ground from us. Let us keep the good ground of sound doctrine, godly practice, church government, policy, and so on, worship, all of those things. All right, so then the next day the Philistines came back to strip the slain. That's, you know, to the victors go the spoils, right? And so they came back and they found Saul and his sons. And so they stripped them of their armor and head, and they sent them about to advertise their victory and to carry tidings to their idols. And they put their armor in the house of their gods and fastened Saul's head in the temple of Dagon. And let us remember, beloved, that the enemy of our souls desires this kind of humiliating triumph over the people of God. And so we must be secure. We must be severe. We must not give ground to them. When all Jabesh-Gilead heard, however, what they had done to Saul, then they arose, the valiant men, and they took away his body and the bodies of his sons and brought them to Jabesh and buried their bones under the oak in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. What the chronicler does not tell us, but the author in 2 Samuel does, or maybe it's the end of 1 Samuel, is that they burned those bodies. Remember that? Because it was a sign of judgment for Saul. And so the chronicler here alludes to it. What does he say? That they buried their bones. They didn't bury their bodies. They buried their bones. And so he does allude to that their bodies had been burned. But the men of Jabesh-Gilead are to be commended because Saul was indeed their captain when he died. And so they went to rescue his body from the abuse that it would suffer under the hands of the infidel. And then we have the chronicler's commentary. Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, and because of the familiar spirit. He did not inquire of the Lord, and he did not listen to the Lord. And that's why the Lord took him away. And that ends the chapter. Let's continue praising.